Back together again, eh?
Let's play.
I'm going in. Cover me, Porkins.
I'm right with you, Red 3.
But I don't want to be a pirate! Oh!
Marvelous. Absolutely marvelous.
It's more for time!
Will you shut up?
I'm a fucking artist. I'm sensitive as shit. We'll do it live.
This is a big one. I'm coming to join you, honey.
I said give me a hell yeah!
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Do you like a jelly baby?
No! No!
You're listening to The Obscure Gentleman, a weekly podcast dedicated to pop cultural nostalgia. I'm your host, Aaron A. Alvarez. And who might you be?
And I'm your host, co-host, something or other, Alex Mitchell.
Alright, so today's episode, it's a review episode, like we did Batman v Superman. Although I don't expect this one to be a two-parter.
No. I'm going to be a bit more proactive since Gentleman Jim is not here right now.
Yeah.
Jim Craddock. Gentleman Ghost.
So today's episode, let me just say it.
Yeah.
Today's episode is about Captain America Civil War.
Tony, if someone dies on your watch, you don't give up.
Who said we're giving up?
We are if we're not taking responsibility for our actions. This document just shifts the blame.
Sorry, Steve, that is dangerously arrogant. This is the United Nations we're talking about. It's not the World Security Council. It's not SHIELD. It's not HYDRA.
No, but it's run by people with agendas, and agendas change.
That's good.
That's why I'm here. When I realized what my weapons were capable of in the wrong hands, I shut it down, stopped manufacturing.
Tony, you chose to do that. If we sign this, we surrender our right to choose. What if this panel sends us somewhere we don't think we should go? What if there's somewhere we need to go and they don't let us? We may not be perfect, but the safest hands are still our own.
If we don't do this now, it's going to be done to us later.
So, saw this last night. Packed house.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? I mean, I have a lot of thoughts.
Out the gate, I really enjoyed it. I didn't really have a chance. I didn't want to say too much because I knew we would be discussing... You know, this today, so I didn't say too much last night. I enjoyed it way more than the last Captain America.
Oh, more than the Winter Soldier?
Yeah, we saw it with a couple friends, and I remember I was kind of like, I liked the aspects of it, but then there were parts of, like, it's a little slow. So I enjoyed this way more than that. And I enjoyed this way more than Avengers 2, like, and that's not even...
Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
was much more
enjoyable. It was just, like... And I don't want this to be like a constant like just beating down on Batman v Superman.
I don't want to run the comparisons gamut.
I don't want to do that, but I just need to say that
to get it out of the way.
Yeah, because if this were more like that, if that were more like this, I would have enjoyed that way more because it was like cool to see. Like, okay, yeah, there's collateral damage, and I get that. That's gonna happen.
A movie that actually addresses it, as opposed to. Here's this one guy who's mad, and but
it's okay because
I don't want to harp on Batman v Superman.
I guess I just want to say one last thing regarding that was that I like that it kind of reminded me, and I'm not even going to mention Batman v Superman, but I like that it reminded me actually of like Public Enemies a bit, where it was like you had like the heroes that knew that were respective of what they were respectful of what. They wanted to do, which is like we feel like this is the right thing to do. We got to side with the government on this. Like, no, like you're not right on this issue.
Yeah,
and then it boiled down to like, you know, I need to protect my friends over siding with the government on this issue. And I thought that was kind of cool. I don't know if that was intentional. It probably wasn't, but it reminded me of that. Overall, I thought this was cool because I remember initially. You and I were kind of worried that this would just be like an Avengers 3.
That's what initially it seemed like.
And it kind of was at a point.
Yeah.
But because obviously we can't just ignore the Avengers, that, you know, they exist.
Yeah.
But I thought it was cool that the latter half of the film really was a Captain America
movie. I mean, it definitely was a Captain America movie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, a part of me also thinks it could have just been called Civil War. And you may not necessarily have needed the Captain America tag onto it. At the same time, though, it's clearly is a Captain America movie because the
focus is mostly on him.
And the main thing comes from Bucky. Bucky's like where a lot of the main problems come from, and And by the way, spoiler heavy. This episode is going to delve deep into spoilers. So we haven't said anything yet, but if you're listening now and you haven't seen it, I would say just stop.
Yeah.
Because this movie you do not want ruined for you, especially a few surprises that are in it. A lot is introduced in this movie. A lot of setup is introduced in this movie. Of course, we get Black Panther introduced.
Yeah. And I think what I thought was interesting was that, like, one of the things I noticed with these big movies is that the characters that aren't really the big stars of the show, I noticed they usually tend to get, like, universal praise. Like, they're saying, oh, they steal the show. Like Hulk in the first one.
Yeah, in First Avengers.
Yeah. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in Avengers 2. Yeah, and then now I'm hearing, like, with this, you know, with both with Spider-Man and, of course...
Yes, and Black Panther.
Which I think is really cool that they're able to give enough character and kind of leave us wanting more.
Well, I mean, they in this movie especially, they did very well at taking the characters who don't really appear that much on screen or have brief screen time and actually giving them something substantial to do.
Yeah.
Like Vision. Okay, so Vision
I forgot about Vision.
Vision isn't in the movie that much, but what we do get of him is a lot of character building. So, like, because Age of Ultron really didn't give us that much, because he appears at the end of the movie. But in this, like...
Again, still one of those characters that people like.
And in really this, like. You're setting up a lot of stuff for him.
Yeah.
His relationship with Wanda, which does play into the whole machine and human thing. And you get some of that here. You get some of that. And there's some flirting scenes, which are kind of interesting. To see a machine flirt with a lady. And then, of course, with Black Panther, it's complete setup for his movie, which will be coming out eventually.
Yeah.
And the thing that what was really interesting about him, Black Panther didn't have any jokes, and I loved it.
He had some deadpan moments that weren't necessarily jokes.
It wasn't him making jokes.
Yeah, it was just his delivery in the moment where I was like, I find humor in it.
He was very... Yeah. Well, and the thing is...
And the backstory for him doesn't really... allow for him to be quippy.
And it's not just that. It's like the character himself has never been that.
Yeah.
The character, he's noble. He's kingly. He does not make quips and jokes. Yeah. And he's a royal guy who just handles his business. And the great thing about it too is, and it's a small detail, a lot of people might not even notice this, he doesn't make a sound when he's clawing or anything, if you've noticed.
Hmm.
When he's moving around, he stalks like a panther.
That's cool.
And in the comics, it's known that he's silent. And that's a detail that I didn't realize until I actually read someone saying that. Like, yeah, you notice when he's, like, running around or, like, sliding down sides of buildings, there's no sound.
And even, I think, in his characterization, like, which I want to say, like, I was initially not big on this character, like, when I read about it.
Because
I'm like, oh, my God, this guy sounds kind of like a hard ass. Like, I don't really know if I'm... gonna enjoy that presence, but I thought they did a really great job in making me actually care about this character.
Yeah.
Like, because of his, you know, his father and all that, and like you were saying, he's not, you know, loud. He wasn't like that what you always see in movies, like the passionate roar of sorrow, because it's like, oh, my, spoiler alert, my father passed away, my father was killed. It was like a very somber, while still kind of like a chaotic moment in a movie. Where
and it also ties into the character itself of how in the comics they view death and when their relatives enter the City of the Dead. And
So that was from the comics?
Yeah.
Okay.
And on top of that, one of Black Panther's titles is King of the Dead. So that's another thing. I mean, there's that chilling line at the end when he's talking to Baron Zemo.
Yeah.
And we'll get to Zemo more in a bit. Where he tells him the living have much more to do with you.
Yeah.
So there's this like life and death aspect that they added to the character that is great. He was not just a like you were saying like just like this hard ass who's just like
just spouting out like
a berserker who's like my father. He's
like the thing like he has his reason to be angry at Bucky.
Yeah.
He thinks
Bucky killed his dad.
Yeah. It was a lie. I really thought it was awesome. And I'm not gonna even lie, like I did kind of cheer up a bit at the end when he said that he was not gonna let revenge consume him, because I thought that was just an awesome, like it was awesome that in one movie I could see like this character just grow and I could learn to like love this
and
character.
And it's really interesting because we've had this sort of like theme done in movies or this trope where the revenge of the father thing. That's a thing we've seen so much.
And it's a trope older than time.
But how they handled it here is amazing because here's a character like actually listening to what's happening and thinking logically about it.
Yeah.
Because at first, he's overcome by rage, but then he even admits like I almost killed the wrong man.
Yeah.
And the post credit scene shows him actually helping Bucky. And we'll get that when we talk about Bucky, but it's actually interesting how they handled this trope and how it actually sort of defied expectations because you don't see him like go like get his revenge on Bucky before he knows it, you know? We see him like towards the end almost doing it, but he's listening to what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Because that's what the Black Panther thing, what they handled really great is the fact that this character isn't stupid. He's not a berserker. He doesn't just like run in and like he needs the facts.
Yeah. I was talking about these ensemble like dark horse kind of characters that get really popular.
Yeah.
You know, Hulk was, you know, everyone loved him because, you know, he was cool. He was, you know, beating up Loki in that one scene. You know, Groot was, you know, people liked him because he was funny. But everything I noticed is like people like these characters because they're cool or because they're like funny or because they did something badass. And I like this character more because he was cool, and I appreciate the fact that he wasn't just like, oh, let me do this cool, awesome thing, get my moment where everyone laughs and cheers.
He had honor. Like, his cool thing was the fact that he was honorable, and the fact that the way he went about things was done in an actual smart way.
And it made me actually like, because I heard about a Black Panther movie, I'm like, I don't care about that. I really want to see it now because I just love this character.
Well, and then like especially the mid-credit scene with him and Bucky.
Yeah, which we'll get to when we talk about
when it pans out and you see that giant panther statue.
Like, that was awesome.
You're like, I want to see this movie that takes place in Wakanda.
Yeah. And Wakanda looked great.
Yeah,
it looked like a place that could exist, but there's also like an element of like fantasy to it.
It's like because Wakanda the comics, it's like pulp sci-fi.
Yeah,
mixed with like old jungle like old jungle fantasy books.
Like big buff dudes wrestling alligators.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm excited for it, and we're talking about and that's the cool thing with this movie. We're talking about such a minor character.
Yeah,
I mean he's mid card, I would say, in the movie. But there's so much there, even though he doesn't have like as much screen time as, say, Tony Stark or Cap.
The main plot of the movie is roughly about him. I mean, events pertaining to him.
And let's go into that. So the main crux of the story, which is the Sokovia Accords, right? Is that what they're called?
Yes.
Is that superheroes will now have to essentially work for the government.
And the United Nations. Yeah, and the United Nations have to approve every action that they do.
And so Tony Stark's position is, you know, because we've let innocents die, and like it was.
And I get it.
There's a scene earlier where
a mother comes up to him and
sort
says
of the Miriam Sharp of this thing.
Yeah.
She says, like, my son died in Sokovia, and Tony Stark's like, shit, we caused that.
And I think he's guilty about the whole Ultron thing.
Well, I mean, he's guilty about everything. It's like a lot of stuff is his fault, really. And this is kind of what it's all led to.
And even, like, Vision says that, like, because he put on the suit, you know, he created this kind of image that people wanted to challenge.
Yeah. And it's like, and then we get into the whole, like, do superheroes create their villains thing. We get that whole aspect. But so Tony Stark's... His point of view is that yes, you need to sign the accords, and once you do that, we'll work with the UN. They'll tell us what we can do and we can't do, but at least we'll have this notion that what we're doing is sanctioned, and there's responsibility for it. At the same time, Captain America's position is okay, but what if they want us to do something that isn't right?
Or if there's something that we need to do they won't let us do?
Yeah, and he's essentially saying they're taking away our liberties to actually protect people, and everyone has an agenda. And it's true.
Because you're saying, like people could essentially, you know, use the Avengers as like a power play, essentially. I was pretty much on Team Cap regardless of, you know.
Yeah.
But I think I just had to look at it like recently and say, like, there's more damage being done, you know, because of Hydra running
around. And that leads to my biggest argument against Iron Man's whole thing.
Yeah.
Is the fact that, you know what, yes, people have been hurt and injured, but at the same time, it's
you're
like
saving more.
Imagine if you weren't there,
yeah.
Loki would have taken over the world. If you weren't there, Ultron would have killed all the humans.
Yeah, and 10 rings would have been.
It gets into the whole the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, yeah. Or the one. And it sucks to say, but yeah, it's true.
Like Wanda, right? Like she could have like done something different. That would have like if she didn't do anything. Cap and all those people in that area would die.
See, but at the same time, yeah, Iron Man does raise good points about accountability.
Yeah.
But based on this universe and the fact that Hydra infiltrated the government, and it's hard to trust those in power.
Yeah.
Cap's point makes a little bit more sense. I mean, but yeah. So that's the main central moral thing of the movie, and then towards the end, something else happens to which. The actual fight that happens between Cap, Bucky.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, we have this big fight between, like it was a 6v6, right?
Okay, yeah. So the airport fight scene.
Okay.
By the way, I just want to say it right. That might be the best fight scene in all of superhero movies.
I don't think there's any real question about it.
Like,
unless I want to talk about this one at the end of the movie. For different reasons.
Yeah, but let's talk about the airport scene.
This is...
Before we talk about the airport scene, we have to set up who appears in the airport scene.
Okay, so...
Which leads us now to another big show stealer of the movie.
Yeah.
We see the words Queens.
And the audience is freaking out, and it was bizarre because I didn't understand why.
I knew right away. I was like, oh, here we go.
I mean, I eventually figured, I'm like, oh, fucking Spider-Man. But I was like, it's weird. I don't associate Queens with Spider-Man. I just associate.
Oh, really?
No, I don't. Oh, wow. I just associate him with all five boroughs.
Well, and then the way they introduce Peter is very slowly, kind of, because you don't see him at first. It's like it's the camera sort of following this like young kid.
Yeah. He's 15.
Yeah, and he's talking, and then we see Aunt May, played by
Marissa Tomei.
Yes. And they do call out the fact that very clearly
she's younger. More attractive looking anime.
And yes, there's some funny dialogue that completely plays to that. And then we're introduced to Peter, and it is the most likable Peter Parker that has ever been on screen, I think.
Okay, so background for me, Peter Parker and the X-Men are essentially those are my like introductions to like
because the cartoons
I just saw that as, oh, it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
I got into the comics, like, Ultimate and and all that, you know, because of them. So, to me, like, Peter Parker, and also the movies. So, yeah. To me, I never had issues with Tobey Maguire, and I didn't even watch Amazing. In hindsight, it's like, he's clearly just, like a 25-year-old actor playing... And it's like, I didn't feel to me like, he felt like an awkward college kid. I'm like, he's like, he can do things on his own. Whereas Peter to me feels like a very, like, he feels like a teenager.
It feels like an actual Peter Parker. It doesn't feel like an older dude trying to play a teenager, and it's kind of awkward.
And he's not like a super,
Aunt May.
Yeah.
Like how Tobey Maguire does his weird child voice.
Yeah, or he's not like a super attractive looking, you know.
Kind of douchebag.
Yeah, I don't want to brag on Andrew Garfield, but look.
I haven't seen the second one, but I saw the first one. I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to make him seem like
a bit like a loner kind of.
But at the same time, it also seems like they're trying to make him seem super cool, too cool for school.
Like, here's my thing. I read Amazing Fantasy 15. I'm looking at this guy. I'm like, okay, this guy doesn't look cool.
Definitely not. No.
So to me, it's like as a teenager reading Ultimate and all that, he looked kind of cool, I guess. But it wasn't to me. It's like when I'm reading that. I identify with that because I wasn't a cool kid. I get what Peter's going through.
He's just a normal teenager, but also he's a teenager with not much money. That made me so happy.
They emphasize that clearly.
So he has like a really, really old like Mac. Yeah. Like one of those like old stationary small box Macs.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like from like the early 90s, late 80s ones.
Yeah.
Like he...
He's a dumpster diver.
Yeah, he's clearly a very poor kid who is brilliant. And they play up the fact that he's smart because none of the other movies have done that. They've said like, oh, he's smart, but you don't get a sense that in this movie, you get a sense that he's very intelligent.
Yeah, I do like the organic web shooters, but I understand your gripe with them is that it takes away his intelligence.
It takes away from the fact that here's this little kid who invented
this webs. Awesome thing. And, like, and
Tony Stark's impressed.
Yeah. So that gets you.
So we get this scene where Tony Stark essentially has him sort of as a wild card, and he
you get this it's humorous. It's awesome.
It also sets up a Homecoming, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah,
and because Tony Stark is going to be in that.
Oh, is it?
That's officially been confirmed.
Okay, cool.
So Tony Stark's sort of like a mentor to him.
Oh, nice.
And I love the back and forth between them, and it reminds me of one of the things I did love about Iron Man 3 was the scenes with him and the little boy. There's this little boy in the movie. And
which I thought I would hate, by the way.
It's great, we'll and so it's great to have him and Parker have this relationship, and you get this sense that Peter Parker is sort of socially awkward, which was the thing about Peter Parker. He was socially awkward, and it's not until he puts on the mask that he
kind of lets loose and he
opens up and that so that leads us to that. Oh, and we also get his costume thing,
which is just like. They're like sweats and like a weird like scuba goggles.
And they do one of the lines I love is the fact that he asks him what his name is.
Yeah.
Spiderling, Spider Boy, and then he's like Spider Man. And
but he says it so meekly that it's
And I love that it touches on the fact that a lot of complaints that were about this actor playing Spider-Man was like, he needs to come Spider-Boy, look how young he is. And it's like, Spider-Man was supposed to be a teenager when he started.
That's not even an argument I want to get
and,
out of.
No, and so that was great that you had that line.
Yeah.
And so then finally when we get that airport scene, which also Scott Lang is introduced, Ant-Man, it's like, oh man, a bunch of these things are coming together. You have so many different types of personalities, and It works incredibly well, but Spider-Man in the scene, oh my god, he wouldn't shut up, and I loved it.
Yeah,
like, and that's the thing. We may criticize Joss Whedon for like the characters don't shut the fuck up. But it's like it's because the certain characters should not be talking constantly and constantly joking. It's like not everyone's a joke machine.
Yeah, like,
but Spider-Man.
Because here was my thing, was that, like, in the second Avengers, I didn't like that the drama of the movie seemed to kind of, like, be...
diffused every 5 seconds.
Yeah. It was like, oh, man, people were dying, but hey, you remember that? And I like, it's like, okay. Like,
every character is telling a joke. And a lot of writers are doing this these days, and not just Joss Whedon. Writers are tend to, like, if you want to make something jokey, it's not... They're not certain jokes personalized for the characters. They're, like, swappable jokes. Like, well, let's make this character say that.
Like... Falcon and Bucky's like interactions, they were in character with each
and
other.
And all they had their own type of humor though.
Yeah, which is like the kind of like belligerent, like it felt like a buddy cop movie before the cops become friends.
I loved seeing them together so much.
It was awesome. Because they're both like Cap's friends, but it's like they never really had a chance
to
interact.
You have the old friend and the new friend.
Yeah.
And so you have like a little bit of rivalry going on there. But
I like that it didn't feel like, oh, I got to get Cap's attention because I'm his friend. Like, it wasn't that kind of thing.
But then you get slight hints of bonding between them, and it's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
There is, to me, the funniest moment in the movie. See, so many characters to talk about and links to happen. So Sharon Carter, Sharon from the previous film, she's Peggy's niece instead of daughter, as a lot of people have assumed.
Because that'd be kind of weird.
Yeah. So she's Peggy's niece, and it's real at the funeral, and it's like a moment like, what? Like, Cap's like, oh, wow. Peggy dies. Like,
oh, but she gives the awesome monologue from the comic.
From the Spider-Man Civil War tie-in.
Yeah.
No, you move. She essentially gives that speech, and it's a Mark Twain quote that Cap gave. So Cap, from Mark Twain to Cap to Sharon. But she gives that, and like that was a moment where I was like, "Oh!" I didn't see anyone else react, but I was
because I knew what it was.
I was like, "Oh shit!"
Yeah,
plant your feet in the rivers of truth.
I think it's one of those things where you can't react to it because you need to just hear it being It's not something that you can like. Oh yeah, like you gotta like listen.
It's a small subtle thing that was just like, you know, awesome. That's all. And like the fact that she delivered it didn't bother me at all. I was like,
I thought it was cool because I think if Cap did it like word for word, I don't know why I'd be kind of like, I like
it. Well, and they altered it slightly too, but yeah, it was great. So
it's cool.
So Sharon's reintroduced, and then sort of the continuing sort of small flirtation that was happening from Winter Soldier is continued here, and they kiss.
It's like, you're probably going to get like chased after. I might die.
And after they kissed, it's like, whoa, what? Like they're kind of confused by it, but
yeah.
But then we had the funniest moment in the movie. It cuts to Bucky and Sam, who had just gotten into like a sort of a little argument, like, hey, move your seat.
Because they're in a little...
Move up your seat.
We're a little bug.
Yeah, and Sam's like, no. And so Bucky just scoots over, which was hilarious. But then the next time you see them, when they're seeing them kiss, they
give the brotherly nod of approval.
Sam gives like the nod. Bucky just like does this thing with his lips and then he gives a big smile. And they both do it at the same exact time. And it just... There's this weird...
It's one of those things where I think if I watched it on my own, I'd say, oh, that's sweet that they care that much about it. But because it was in, like, a packed house, and everyone was just like... It was one of those things where, like, if you watch your friend do that, like, everyone knows that feeling
In your head, you're thinking that, there's this audible, aw, yeah, that they're both
doing. Everyone has probably had that moment where they see their friend do something awesome, you know. And you're like, yeah.
So at this one moment, they're sort of having this like this jealous rivalry thing going on. But then that sort of like
diffused.
It's like our friend is kissing. All right.
Yeah, all right.
So that moment's awesome. So then that leads to the scene with the van, and there's Ant-Man, and he's happy to see Captain America. And you know what? That's what I love about these movies is that
people like seeing Cap.
No, it's not just that. Like characters are like act like. It's not just like, well, the characters are on screen, let's just have them act like business as usual.
Yeah.
You have genuine reactions where it's like, of course a guy like Scott Lang would be excited to see Captain America.
Yeah.
And like he's shaking his hand, super excited.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me like, and I like that Flash and Arrow kind of do this too.
Yeah.
Whenever like we meet the Flash, like, oh, he's fast. And like, oh, we know the Flash.
I like when people have actual reactions to other characters because it's like, it actually brings something instead of just like it could have easily been done. Okay, Cap, let's do this. Instead, it's just like, wow, he had a fanboy moment, which leads to the biggest fanboy moments, is Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So in this whole fight that's gonna happen, then
I like that he has to fight Captain America, but he still gives him like a little salute and says he's a big fan of his.
It's funny because like Spider-Man, it's like he loves all these people he's fighting.
But he has to fight them.
And the whole time, he just keeps talking, which does lead to more Bucky and Falcon, like, sort of, like, buddy... I don't want to say, like, it's stuff that connects them or whatever, but it's, like, it kind of brings them closer.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you get the line, like, I hate you, and he...
Which is one of those...
Like, they both get webbed up. Yeah. They both get webbed up by Spider-Man.
I think everyone has said to their buddy or their pal,
yeah,
I hate you.
Like Anakin told, oh, you're just playful, I hate you.
Well, there's that outtake that he just did that, oh, I hate you.
The chase between them and Spider-Man, because everyone's fighting someone in the scene, but Bucky Falcon are both fighting Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man is just like webbing his way through everything, like through like if they're inside like an airport terminal thing. He's webbing like crazy. I've never seen Spider-Man web like this in any of the movies.
Because in the original Spider-Man movies, they're kind of just like...
Broad swings. He does broad swings, and he does that even in the newer ones. It's like, they're broad swings. Like, they looked impressive, but this is just like... Spider-Man is like bouncing off the walls, and like he's going from swing to crawling to swinging, and like...
So like, I'm excited to see how they do more. Like, because in the Spider-Man video game for Spider-Man 2...
Like one of the most fun games ever.
It's one of the best Spider-Man games ever made. But like you have all these awesome web moves that you can do. You can do like web bombs and stuff like that. So I'm kind of hoping maybe I could see a bit of that. I don't know if I will.
Well, we saw him be creative with the webs, and that's the great thing this Spider-Man's doing is like, okay, he's being creative with the webs. He the way he swings and the way he fights is completely different from the other movies, where it seems like, okay, this is someone who's hard to catch. Because, like, and that's the thing always been about Spider-Man, it's like, he's so annoying because it's like, you can't get him. You just can't get him. And everyone...
And you can't get him to shut up either. I think that's
and,
the other...
And I love that when Falcon says, you know, people don't normally talk this much when they're fighting. oh, sorry. But he keeps talking. And that's... See, that's the thing this Spider-Man differs... The biggest difference is they would... Spider-Man, like Tobey and Andrew Garfield, they would quip or say something after the fight.
Yeah.
Right, like,
yeah, because it was always one of those things where, like you always have the big fight, and then it's like, oh, I did a big moment, I'm gonna quit.
Yeah, or and it's like when there's like a pause in the fight.
Yeah,
it's and, you who's out, Gobby, out of your mind.
Yeah,
and
well, to me, I just like that because it's a and, cheesy
and,
shit.
Well, and here's the other thing though about the lines that the other they were like for like kind of like forced jokes where it's like. It's like because they're not fighting anymore, they have to find something for him to say.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, it's like it all works because he's frantically webbing and zipping from everywhere to everywhere, punching.
The most characterization you really get from like that is like he's still like woohoo, like whenever he's like running. It's like,
yeah.
And it's like it's fun, I guess, but like that's the extent of it.
Yeah,
really.
He's pretty much silent while he's fighting, but when this, it's like, oh my god, this is the Spider-Man that. Villains are annoyed by. This is the Spider-Man that, like, makes...
I don't know if that's gonna translate well, if people are gonna be like, man, like, this is actually annoying.
Oh, but the thing is, everyone, like, the crowd reaction was great, and from what I've read online, everyone loved that Spider-Man was constantly talking.
Yeah, yeah but I mean, but what I know there are more casual fans that won't appreciate that in the long run.
And this is on Facebook.
But, no, but I mean in the long run, I don't know.
Oh, I think it totally will.
I hope it will, because I like it. But, yeah, like, with the big fight though, I need to mention this right now. Seeing the I know it's on a cover, but to me I just know it as Hawkeye's ultimate, which is essentially using
Ant-Man on the tip of the arrow,
yeah.
Which got a huge reaction
from I got a big reaction from like the fans that I could tell, like I knew, because it got a big reaction in general.
The
but
theater like loved it.
Yeah,
Ant-Man being on the top of Hawkeye's arrow,
and then as the finisher goes. It ends with the arrow hitting you, and then Ant-Man, like, where the hell's Ant-Man? Oh, here's fucking Giant Man. Stomps your ass.
Yeah, so, before that, like, the arrow thing, he goes into Tony Stark's suit, first of all, and starts just pulling things apart. And, again, he's just delivering awesome lines. And it's like, this is how quips and one-liners are delivered.
Yeah.
Where they fit the situation.
Because they're not trying to kill each other, but they're trying to defuse... The
well, it's
they're trying to prevent an action from
and
happening.
It's not just that, it's the whenever a joke was done in this scene, it was a situational joke. It was done to what was happening instead of I'm gonna say something funny.
Yeah,
even though
oh I'm gonna hit you, the music and all the sound effects are gonna stop. I'm gonna say my line. The audience is gonna clap and cheer, and then we'll
keep going.
Like that's. What I couldn't stand about, like, The Last Avengers, because I knew every time it was going to happen. The music's going to cut out. The sound effects are going to be...
And someone's going to go...
Yeah, and the audience will go, yay! And then it's like, okay, like...
Like, one of Ant-Man's, to me, his best line was... It wasn't really even a joke. And that's what's great about, like, the humor in this movie is... They're not necessarily jokes. It's, like, funny situations where... He gives Captain America shield to him.
Here you go, Captain America. And it was just, one of the best. Yeah,
it's because he's new to this, and he's like, "Well, it's Captain America," so he calls him that.
Yeah,
and it felt like this is such a comic book moment.
Yeah,
like he's straight up calling him. He's not saying Steve or Cap. He's saying, "Here you go, Captain America."
It's the delivery of how he says it too, because it's like it feels like a very I gotta sound hero.
I'm a superhero. I have to sound like a superhero.
I'm also like inside. I'm marking out. I'm being such a fanboy about this because like,
and they got a great reaction too. But so then
it's and again, if you just read it on script, there's nothing really humorous about it. But again, all in the delivery.
The big moment, literally the big moment.
Yeah.
They're basically like, hey, we have to get to the hangar to leave. Like, we need a distraction. We need something. And It's like, do you think you could do it? And he's, and you're like, wait, what's he talking about? And he's like, well, I tried it once and I passed out. And so then he does it. He turns into Giant Man.
Yeah.
He actually becomes Giant Man.
That got a really nice
and
reaction.
Even him becoming Giant Man, his eyes are like, whoa. Like, it's almost like he's like freaked out by how big he is.
Yeah.
And it just, it's such a fun scene. And he's stomping around everywhere. And everyone's like trying to like, bring him down, but they can't.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's just huge. And the reaction to that was, yeah, everyone was like, oh!
Obviously, the inevitable thing had to happen, though, with this big fight scene, which is, I think, you get the big awesome moments, you get the humor, which is good, but I think eventually you do have to acknowledge that there is a bit of a
the come down of that scene happens.
Yeah.
And what the come down that happens is Steve and Bucky
are escaping.
They're escaping. Black Panther's like fuck no, yeah. Like I'm gonna stop you. But then Black Widow is like, you think, oh shit, she's gonna stop Steve, and then
she stops
Panther because her whole thing is like, you're gonna do it anyways, and it's like, you believe in this cause. So as they're leaving, War Machine is trying to bring them down.
Yeah.
And we barely talked about War Machine, but there's actually kind of an interesting thing between him and Sam, like this bickering back and forth thing.
Yeah, because they're both the friends of
they're
the
both main, the sidekicks, basically.
Yeah. They're both black, too.
Yeah. Kinda... But then, so he's chasing down Bucky and Cap, but meanwhile, Scarlet Witch is like, out of commission on the floor.
Yeah.
And Vision goes to help her. And throughout the whole movie, they keep dropping things of, like he says, like, I wish people would see you how I see you.
Yeah.
Because the world is essentially scared of her because what she can do.
But they're also on the opposite ends of the sides here.
Because he's thinking completely logically and without, like, emotion and, like...
He he's right, to be honest.
He is correct, but the thing is, he has no perspective of, like, human error or what it means. Like, he doesn't completely understand it yet. But for some reason, and he doesn't even know why, he does have... They don't say it, but he essentially has feelings for Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, and he can't comprehend it. Which I think is always awesome when these robots or androids, like, in any movie...
Yeah.
I'm just thinking Star Trek.
Like Data.
Yeah. Which is when they are clearly evolving as an organism... And they're getting these emotions, and they kind of write them off as like, oh, it's a malfunction. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
and I always like that.
And he clearly is feeling her to the point where he's trying to comfort her, like when she's like on the ground, and it messes him up. And it's like, hey, Vision, we need you to help here, bring Falcon down. And he misses, and he hits. War Machine hits James Rhodes.
I'll be honest, so I kind of felt like Falcon did a good job of dodging
that. Oh, he did.
So the blame
Falcon's aerial combat, amazing in this movie, by the way.
Yeah, I don't feel like... Oh, Red Wing.
Yes, and also his Red Wing. And they found a way to put it in without it being a bird.
Yeah.
An actual bird. But yeah, Rhodey gets...
He gets shot.
Free fall to the ground. And he gets paralyzed.
Yeah.
He's essentially paralyzed, which leads to Iron Man going, oh, fuck. Like,
it's the come down, and it is the whole,
and it's like, okay, now we're into serious times.
Yeah.
So the last part of the movie, now let's quickly talk about Zemo.
Normally he's, like, German, right?
Baron Zemo is the son of the original Baron Zemo.
Yeah,
from... So Helmet Zemo is the son of, yeah. But, of course, like, they had to change these things. Obviously.
Yeah.
Now he's Sarkovian. He could still be German still, because he mentions his father, but I imagine if they do ties to the original Zemo, it'll be his grandfather.
Yeah.
Because
he's very young.
Yeah. So he was a...
Not very young, but he has a young face, and a father would only be in like his 50s,
so,
I think.
He was in Sarkovia when everything went down, and throughout the movie you're seeing him on his phone, like, listening to a voicemail from his wife. And you find out why. During the whole Sokovia thing, they lived on the outskirts, like, in the forest area, where they would be fine, and, like, if anything happened, you know. But that wasn't the case, and his child and his wife...
So what happened with the shockwave of the island hitting just...
Yeah.
They
died.
Yeah.
And so now he's full of revenge, And he just he realizes, and it was also great to see this. He realizes that he can't just take down the Avengers. He needs the Avengers to take down each other.
He's such a magnificent bastard in this movie.
Well, it's great because it ties into who Zemo is, who Helmut Zemo in the comics is as a character. Mm-hmm. It's a dude who will do anything to achieve his ends. And it's always for what he perceives as being right.
Yeah.
Zemo has been a character who can sometimes be a good guy, sometimes be a bad guy. Mostly a bad guy. But what he did, his plan, made complete sense. And there's never a moment in his plan where I'm like, how did this all line up together? Well, because it turns out he actually, he worked for he was part of the Black Ops. He was like a higher up in the, Sarkovian, whatever the military thing was. And his plan essentially made the Avengers fall apart. It made them all go each other's throats.
Yeah.
And that was his plan the entire time. Because I was thinking, because there's this whole subplot about other super soldiers.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, there's going to be a big fight at the end with a bunch of super soldiers. Oh, no. Right when you see all the other super soldiers, they're all shot in the head.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, so... Oh, so this was just... He was playing chess.
Yeah.
He was essentially playing chess with...
And you find out, and I didn't even realize this until you mentioned this last night, which is the files that contain...
Okay. So...
Early on, we find out that Bucky attacked a car and stole something from it.
He stole some Powerade from...
Yes.
It was like this glowing blue stuff.
And I love that was the biggest thing to take away from that scene was, oh, he stole some
stuff.
Yeah.
Which
is not really the case.
And then you find out the truth, though, is that the car that he crashed and the people he killed...
Were the Starks.
Were Tony Stark's parents.
Yeah.
And the footage is shown by Zemo. And that's the thing. Zemo doesn't fight in this movie.
Yeah.
His whole thing is just being a calculated asshole who does everything without lifting a finger. And
by the way, Howard Stark... he refers to Bucky by his actual rank.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, heartwarming that he remembered his face over all those years, but also very tragic.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's... So seeing that scene of him...
That was just rough.
And the other thing is, the sad thing is, Bucky remembers it all, and he hates that he remembers it all.
Yeah, because here's the thing is, he is under no control of what
he's
he does.
He's brainwashed, but the things he remembers.
And that's fucked up, because in pretty much... any other iteration of brainwashing, it's like, I don't remember. I don't remember.
Fiction always does that where it's like, because it's an easy way where you don't have to talk about the fact that this shit's going to traumatize someone.
Yeah.
And it does. It destroys him. And that's why he didn't want to admit that he knew who Cap was. He didn't want his best friend to know that, I remember and I am a monster sort of thing.
Yeah.
But we get Tony Stark's reaction, and it's like, it's heartbreaking.
The whole scene is very, the music is very fucking tense.
And
it was almost it almost plays off like a horror scene, just watching
What was great about it is, and so many movies when the character finds out something like this, they always have to have it be super macho, where the character almost has a silent sadness.
Yeah.
Tony Stark is fucking crying.
Yeah.
Tony Stark is in tears. It's like, oh shit, he killed my parents. And then it's like, Cap, did you know about this? And it's like, yeah. And it's like, a guy who I kind of consider a really good friend has lied to me. And then that's when Tony Stark just is like, you know what? I came here to reach out the olive branch, and I realized I was wrong. But then it turned from that, which was the point of the movie initially, and it turned into, I'm gonna fuck you both up.
Yeah.
Because this hurts.
What I loved about this big fight scene was that it wasn't filled with it wasn't filled with big awesome. It was, to me, watching it was tragic.
You wanna
It was a very emotionally, it was visually impressive, but it was emotionally tragic.
Here's what it reminded me of. It reminds me of the Return of the Jedi, the fight scene between Vader and Luke.
Because there's you obviously need a victor in this scenario, but
it's a clearly emotional fight.
Yeah,
it's a guy letting out so many years of anger and resentment and sadness, and just finally having a way of just the catharsis of, I'm gonna kill the person who murdered, And he, the crazy thing is, even though his father also died too, that grudge that he had with his father is still kind of there in the fact that
he can't, like,
because he says, "You killed my mom."
Yeah,
that's what. And that moment, I was like, "Oh, fuck."
Yeah,
like, because like early in the movie, it sets up that he really loved his mom. Like he loved, like, his father was such a hard ass, but his mom was, he loved her, and that was the most heartbreaking thing to him. And so that line he tells Bucky, like, "You killed my mom." It's like, oh, that's such a fucking gut punch.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Watching this fight, it wasn't like, yeah, go Cap, go Iron Man. It was more like, man, this is a very emotionally, like, complex fight.
Yeah,
like,
I'm glad it wasn't filled with a bunch of, you know, hooting and hollering from the audience, because I appreciate that, you know, people were kind of just drawn into how rough it is to see two characters again. And I get to do one since you just did one.
Yeah.
Is that, like, I've learned to love both of these characters, whereas with Batman v Superman, I know these characters through other properties,
yeah,
and I should like them, I guess. But with this, it was like, I've watched these guys for, what, since 2008? So that's a bit of time, isn't it? So we just see them just destroying each other, and it's
an emotional fight.
Yeah,
it's almost like you don't want anyone to die.
No,
and that's,
but that, you know, that's a very,
and also,
possibility.
They made it so balanced, and the fact that is, and we do have to bring it up, is the fact that Batman and Superman fighting, it was clearly one sided.
Yeah,
it was clearly, here's just these two dudes fighting. Where in this, it was just like Cap doesn't want to kill Iron Man. He just wants to subdue him and let Bucky get away. Iron Man, on the other hand, is so full of anger, rage, and sorrow that he wants to just fucking murder.
He was gonna just cut freaking what's his face's head in half, wasn't he?
Yeah,
yeah.
Like he was that full of anger and rage, and that was Zemo's plan. Like, and that's so crazy. It's like, Zemo's plan worked to a T, and then quickly we're shown Zemo. He's outside in the snow.
Oh, and T'Challa followed him. Black Panther followed.
Initially, Black Panther was gonna try to kill Bucky, but then he found, like, he listened and he heard, like, oh shit, so I was wrong. So,
which is awesome. That it wasn't that big. Like, I'm gonna rush in and
I thought that was gonna happen. Like, okay, where's Black Panther? The next time we see him is Zemo's deleting the voicemail because it's like, okay, my mission's done. I got my revenge. He's about to kill himself. He's about to blow his brains out. Black Panther stops it, and he essentially tells him, I understand why you did this.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to answer for what you've done.
Yeah, which it's cool because it's like, you see you see that Tony's driven by revenge. You see that, like, Cap is driven by loyalty. And you see that, like, Zemo's, like, obviously just consumed in anger.
Everyone has their own motivation, but the thing is, Black Panther, who has the most immediate, like, his is
the
most immediate.
He got played.
And he reacts nobly to it, where it's like, you know what? I am now a king. I am the son of a king. And he could have easily killed Zemo.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because technically Zemo's the reason his father's dead.
Yeah.
But
he's the one that did the bomb.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't. He doesn't kill him because he realizes that this whole thing, like, this is what happens when you let vengeance get the better of
you. You know what? Everyone always rags on, you know, Batman in any iteration for not killing, even though there are moments where, like, you should probably kill this fucker. But this was a time when it was like, yes, you probably should, but you not doing it doesn't just come off like a cheap cop-out, like, oh, we'll bring this villain back again because, you know, I didn't kill him this time. It felt like a reasonable, mature character development.
Yeah, and that's the thing, the one strike I have against most Marvel movies, they always kill the villain.
Oh, yeah.
In this, it's such a trope in superhero movies that, well, we gotta kill the bad guy. It's like, because it's a trope in all fiction where it's like, the bad guy has to die, where it's like, in comic books, it's not like that because they're perpetual. So it's like, you can't because you want to keep having encounters.
It's the Joker immunity thing where it's like,
you want to keep having...
We love these characters because they're so iconic.
Yeah.
You can't just kill them
but
off.
The movie so easily, just kill them. And it's like,
yeah,
it was so great that, okay, Zemo's not dead. And you know what? This is kind of the birth of the Baron Zemo we're used to.
Yeah.
The purple sock Zemo.
Yes.
But I mean,
Baron von Strucker's dead.
Yeah, and this gets to I think a great point of the movie. There was no shock value death for fucking once.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. Civil War didn't have shock value either. Not Civil War. Winter Soldier really didn't have a shock value death.
No.
It's just after seeing Age of Ultron, it's like, you did not have to kill Quicksilver. Okay, like but that's a Joss...
Like, Coulson dying, I...
Again, these are two Joss Whedon films we're talking about.
Yeah.
And Joss Whedon, it's gotten to a point where it's like, that used to be an emotional gut punch from you, but now it's like, every time I see something Joss Whedon, I'm like... Well, someone's gonna die in this.
See, it was like with Wash, I was like, okay, like, you didn't need to do that. Like, what was the point of that?
But see, that was early on when it was still kind of like, it's understandable.
But I didn't watch that movie early and that's, on. That's I watched that recently, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, but there's no point.
It's become, since Buffy, like, he always has to just kill someone. He has to kill a character, because it's like, that's the easiest way to get emotional value.
Like with Gurm, with Game of Thrones, like most of these deaths, like they're like shocking, but they make sense, you know.
Yeah,
I'm talking about like the books, because the show is just going crazy now.
I'm glad Zemo was allowed to. I mean, we did get Crossbones die, but it's Crossbones.
I didn't care. I felt he deserved it.
He was meant to be a casualty to set up the whole entire movie, and it's again, it's Crossbones.
Yeah.
So Zemo is alive, and so he sent to the. By the way, the Raft is introduced.
Yes.
Which is a superhuman facility to house these people.
So this is like a Supermax, essentially.
Yeah. And that's where all the Avengers were put, like when they were after they're arrested after Cap and Bucky left. But then at the end, Tony Stark, like, he returns home and everything after being beaten to shit, and Bucky losing his arm, but Iron Man's Cap rips out his Cap who rips out, isn't it? His arc reactor.
Yes.
Yeah, Cap rips out his arc reactor. He pulls it out. Smashes his shield into him, and it's like, Jesus Christ. And then we get this moment of like, and it's Tony Stark's just last, like, trying to just stab him because he's so angry. It's that shield doesn't even belong to you.
Yeah.
And what Cap does, and it's again, thank this movie for doing this. There's no macho line of or anything like that. Cap drops his shield.
I was expecting one too.
It's just like, fine.
Yeah.
Fine. It's almost like, you know what? Fine. You know what? You get this. He drops his shield, and it's like, oh, shit. And so then we get sort of a few days later or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cap's wanted and everything and all this stuff. And Tony Stark gets a letter from Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially saying, like, look, we both kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
We both did wrong. And he says, but... just to let you know, I will be there for you if you ever need me.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, and there's like a phone. Because, and then Thunderbolt Ross calls him and says, hey, we got a problem. He puts him on hold.
Because he referenced earlier that he loves doing that.
It turns out Cap is breaking everyone out.
Yeah.
And it's such a gratefully put up scene because you see like Scarlet Witch, like she's back in captivity and you see that it's like, it's fucked her up.
Yeah.
And you see all that, like, you see Scott Lang sort of like, I'm used to this, like, yeah. It's prison. But then you see all the guards on the floor, and then Cap, just as Steve Rogers, he says a little thing, and it's like, oh, wow. And it ends, and then we get the mid-credit thing, and then we get the ending, the final stinger, which is with Spider-Man.
With
the spider signal, and it's like, that's something I haven't seen in a year, because they haven't used the spider signal since, like, the 70s.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it just everything didn't really get tied up, but it
left open threads, but not open questions.
Yeah, it's
which I like.
Everything it's like, okay, so Zemo is probably gonna do something fucked up because see, not only did he not get a satisfaction of offing himself, it's like his plan really didn't work in the end. They may have squabbled, but now it's like when he sees them reform, it's gonna be. It's going to hurt him so badly.
Yeah.
Which, is that going to lead to Thunderbolts? Maybe? Who knows? I mean, here's another thing. Thunderbolt Ross is, like, in charge of the whole Raft thing.
Mm-hmm.
He could create...
Thunderbolts.
Basically call them Thunderbolts after himself. Yeah, that's something I thought of. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, maybe they're going to do that. Maybe they're going to use Thunderbolt Ross to create the Thunderbolts. That'd be kind of interesting. On top of that, though, we have Iron Man sort of now leading... sort of a scattered version of the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Vision's there. He's trying to help Rhodey get his legs back. Well, his walk again. So we got this, and then we have Cap's underground team, essentially. And then the Black Panther set up. And so everyone has their own path. And so, but for now, what we're going to have to deal with is Doctor Strange is coming out next. And then Thor, and then Black Panther.
Yes.
And then Guardians, too. But, so it's going to be a while till we return to these characters.
Yeah, but,
but it's, the threads are all there. Like, oh, and Spider-Man also coming out next year.
Yeah.
But, man, this movie was just, it was fun. It was emotional. It was satisfying in just many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just like, after we punched him.
Yeah.
It was way more than that. Yeah. And Sharon, by the way, Sharon Carter's role is pretty great in this movie. She's not like a super actiony as like the artwork on like different things led you to believe. Mm-hmm. She's just giving out information, and it's pretty great. Yeah. I might say this is my favorite Cap movie.
But I feel like I'm saying that every time I see it.
Well, here's the thing. As of now, I consider Captain America to be a very solid trilogy.
Yeah.
Like, maybe one of the best trilogies, like, in up but there with all the
other. If you just watch them alone, they need the other ones to kind of.
I don't think so. See,
well, this one does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you were to watch Cap 1, 2, and. Yeah. Maybe. But I think that's a given at this point now.
Yeah.
Is just people know.
Yeah. Just watch them, please.
That the MCU is all connected, so yeah. Everyone just watches them regardless. But Cap,
except the shows, sort of.
That's a whole different discussion altogether, yeah. About that. But with this, yeah, it's Cap 1 through 3 are just, to me, Marvel's most solid movies, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, Guardians also.
Well, these guys are doing Avengers, right?
They're doing Part 1 and 2 for Infinity War.
Good.
Which now is going to have, that's, those aren't the final titles anymore.
Okay.
But yeah, so the Russos are great, and they, yes, they brought a character from Community onto here. I know he wasn't, yes, playing the same character.
But he was
the dean was being the dean,
yeah,
of MIT, and that was beautiful. But the Russos are, they're to go from You Mean Dupree to this.
That's their pedigree.
It's so it's so crazy. This is how you do a superhero movie. This is how you do a movie.
Yeah.
Think about this. So many characters balanced right.
Yeah,
that made. Does that make you hopeful for Infinity War? Basically,
absolutely. And you know what? I may not like the output of every Marvel movie that comes out. I usually do, but
yeah, it's kind of hard to dislike any.
But there are some that I prefer over others.
Yeah.
But I feel like these guys should be the rightful heir, I guess, to that everyone was saying, "Oh, this is Whedon's thing. This is his," you know. This is his franchise now. And I'm like, I don't know.
No, it's definitely, it's clearly not. And yeah, them coming from the world of, like, I guess sitcoms or whatever, like Community.
Yeah.
They know how to do an ensemble cast.
Yes.
And it's very clear, like, everyone got their time, which Scarlet Witch.
Everyone gets their time. Everyone gets their shit in. Everyone gets a chance to shine, but not like over, like, yeah, season the film with, like, oh, hey, remember that? You know, because, well, that was the best
one part. One thing I'm noticing is people saying, like, oh, hey, they gave Scarlet Witch an actual personality now.
Yeah.
Because in the last one, even though Scarlet Witch is one of my favorite characters, yeah, I loved seeing her on screen for multiple reasons.
Yeah.
But Scarlet Witch is fantastic, and her and Vision, I want to see more of that. I want to see that relationship develop, because to me, it's one of my favorite, like, romance in comics history. It's one of them. But yeah, every character got their due in this movie.
Yeah.
There was even Black Panther's father got his due in this movie.
Yeah. That you get, like, what, one nice moment to see them bond. And that's it. But you know what? I cared that much about, like, just seeing, like, that father-son dynamic, and it's gone now.
A lot of character moments from small scenes, but yet still a giant story.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Avengers Infinity, I can't not think it's going to be great. I think it'll be great.
Yeah.
This movie, so, what's your Sadler score?
Sadler score? Oh, and Sadler's the president of this universe.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he has more
last week we mentioned him in Bill and Ted, and this, yeah, so
he's got more
Sadler, is it
He's got more push and pull.
There should be 5 degrees of Sadler instead of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. I'll give it a 5 for now.
5 out of 5?
Yeah. Because there are things that kind of slowed the movie down for me that I didn't care for. But I feel the emotional impact of everything kind of just outdoes that for
me. Yeah. And there's never a point where you're just like... I felt there's never a point where like, get on with this scene.
Yeah.
Because everything was snappy.
Yeah.
5 out of 5 for this. This movie made me like Tony Stark again. And I fucking love that it made me like Tony Stark again.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just like Robert Downey mugging the camera. It was like... They gave that emotional impact to him and it made me happy that at the end I was like, I wasn't really Team Cap or Team Iron Man. I was just like, fuck, his parents were murdered, and it's like, but then it's such a complex situation, and man. Oh, and by the way, Robert Downey Jr. like looking young was creepy.
Oh,
it didn't
because he wasn't back to school.
It didn't look bad. It was just like,
it was weird.
I don't like seeing Robert Downey Jr.
because he just looks like took out his wrinkles and shaved them. Whereas no, he should look like back to school. Robert Downey Jr. partying with Rodney Dangerfield. Yeah.
Doing all the coke. All the coke in the world. Obscure Gentleman fun, head over to www.theobscuregentleman.com. And if you'd like to help support this podcast and the webcomic, please visit www.patreon.com/theobscuregentleman. We thank you for listening.